Welcome to the most inappropriate book club you never knew you were missing. Featuring at least three different books every week. Starring Martha Steele, the weirder the book, the better. Vonnie Golden, historical fiction with a side of trauma porn. Keith Steigert, reading the books your mother warned you about. Megan Runyon, reading YA and whatever her current fixation is. Pat Griner, refusing to read by the rules, as a rule. These people are passionate about books, maybe a little too passionate. Plotting world domination, one book at a time, they are three book girls.
There's this TikTok time traveler, and this person has predictions. I've been talking about them on the air over the last week or so. The one that I did today was about the discovery of dragons in the Rocky Mountains.
Dinosaurs are real. Why can't dragons be real?
I feel like someone would have already eaten us.
Well, I find it highly unlikely that someone would not have seen either evidence of them.
But how do we know that the dinosaurs didn't breathe fire and have dragon wings?
Oh, and they can also talk to humans.
Okay, well, that part I'm going to go with no. But I'm just saying, we don't know that the T-Rex didn't breathe flames. We're just assuming. Maybe that's why he has short arms, so that he doesn't get his arms in his own fire.
So he doesn't catch his arms on fire?
Yep.
If that's true, Pat, you're the closest.
Closest to what?
To the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, I was going to say closest to being a dinosaur. That's true.
Oh, no. That's not what I meant at all.
I meant if we were going to send out a representative to try to go find the dragons in the Rocky Mountains, that you would be closer.
Pat does not seem interested.
I'm skeptical on that one.
If time travel really is possible, it would make sense that there would be time travelers everywhere.
I'd time travel to like the day before Pompeii got incinerated.
This guy's called Radiant Time Traveler on TikTok.
Oh, there are a lot of them then.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Okay,
yeah,
this guy's...
I've seen different ones.
This is the first prediction that's supposed to happen this year. May 27th, a civil war begins in the USA when Texas secedes from the rest of the country. Other countries take sides, beginning World War III, and nuclear weapons are used.
This sounds like
that's
the movie.
That's not going to happen before
Civil
the
war.
Election, even.
It's what it says.
That sounds like the exact plot of the new movie Civil War.
Okay, here's another one. June 4th, the first ever human-chimp hybrid is made. It has a fur, a tail, and can speak to humans and monkeys, and begins teaching other monkeys to speak, and they eventually become full members of society.
Okay, this is literally every summer movie.
June 4th.
Planet of the Apes comes out this year. We have the Civil War movie coming out this year.
Okay, does Civil War come out on May 27th?
I don't know. I'm about
does
to Google it.
Does the other one come out on June 4th? Because that would be funny.
It would be hilarious. Okay, July 24th. Pat, pay attention to this one. July 24th, the Yellowstone volcano erupts, covering almost the entire U.S. and Canada in ash. It is a super volcano that stretches two-thirds of the way across the U.S. and creates a canyon four times larger than the Grand Canyon.
I hate to tell you, but if that thing erupts, that's going to be another near-extinction event. It's going to kill so many people on the planet.
I know.
April 12th, Civil War came out,
imagine,
so he's a month off.
So imagine that's already... We're already past all that bad stuff. And on September 15th, the first ever hypercane hits the U.S. East Coast. That's a hurricane with over 500 miles per hour. I miss the dragons. Where's the dragon one?
500 mile an hour winds?
Yep.
No.
Is this the same guy, though, that said that there was going to be a super tornado that took out Tulsa on the 8th of April, though?
Probably.
I don't know.
And that didn't happen.
Okay, here's the dragon one. August 15th, dragons are discovered in the Rocky Mountains. They can fly, breathe fire, and speak.
I think this guy is just full of shit.
In like 3 days?
That's August 15th. This is like one a month.
Oh, August. Okay.
Yeah. So the May one is the Civil War.
Dragon come back out?
Yeah. May one is the Civil War. June 4th is the human chimp
Civil
hybrid,
War, the movie's
hybrid.
Out today.
Yeah.
Which I did not know.
Yes, it is.
July 24th, Pat, you can come stay with me because at least you'll survive. I'll be back from Minnesota
by then.
Wait,
what was the date on the dragons?
The dragons is August 15th.
Oh, House of the Dragon season 2 comes back June 16th.
Yay!
Yeah, the guy might actually be predicting.
He's like 1 month off each one.
He's predicting movie releases.
Yeah. I think he is, yeah. Yeah. That would actually be, really so freaking clever.
Yeah. Because Planet of the Apes does have a movie coming out this year.
What was that tornado movie that came out that was so popular?
Twister.
Twister.
And the new Twister's coming out. The new Twister's coming out.
Coming out.
That would be a really clever way to promo movies.
So a
though.
Time traveler, it would be interesting to see how many time travelers, supposedly, you know, like the ones on TikTok and whatnot, to write down all of the stuff that they're predicting and see if any of it is anywhere close to being true.
You know who I'm actually convinced is a time traveler? The writers of The Simpsons.
Agree.
If anybody on this planet is actually a time traveler, it's the people that create The Simpsons. They've had Trump winning. They had the Key Bridge falling. And like years ago, like it wasn't.
They had the Key Bridge falling?
I did.
Wow.
Yep. According to TikTok, I have not independently gone to Google.
I was going to say, you better check your facts, ma'am, before you talk about that.
But they did have Trump winning because when Lisa's president,
there's a bunch of stuff that they had on The Simpsons that has come to pass.
Well, you know, it's funny with The Simpsons because they do put in a lot of history and stuff in their shows. When I was in Ireland, those kids watch that like it is a textbook. Like if you're trying to teach something about like Tiananmen Square, you'd be like, you know, in the episode of The Simpsons where they're like, yeah, like God. They are in it over in Ireland. That is like their favorite show. They could tell you what every episode was about.
Well, I don't suppose Vonnie has a time travel novel in her pocket over
she
there,
might.
Does she?
Probably is history. It's close. We get to time travel in her books to the story.
I actually read a nonfiction this week.
Oh,
sweet.
And I didn't realize it was a nonfiction until like I was a little ways into the book, because the only reason I read this book was because they told us not to.
Oh,
I read The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls.
Oh, that's okay. A good one.
Okay. Yeah. And
that hasn't been done, right?
No, mm-mm. It's okay. Very topical, Vonnie. That's a good idea because, you know, the Edmond School District's threatening.
They did sue.
Did they lose their? Edmond School District sued so that they could keep the book.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Walters was on the news the other day talking about people who something about things with sexual situations are going to lose funding, blah, 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 so on and so forth, whatever the hell he was talking about. I don't know. When he's on, I kind of turn off the TV.
You and fair. Me and about half of the people in Oklahoma.
It makes me too angry. I just can't watch it. I don't want to be angry.
Ryan Walters is the superintendent of
schools.
In schools.
Yeah, the educational.
Education.
He's not very smart.
Most of them aren't. They've only read one book.
The Bible.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Talk about sexual situations. Dude. Eve cheated on Adam with a snake. Talk about size matters.
God. You're going to go straight to hell for that one.
Make sure you say hi to OJ while you're there.
Right? That'll be my punishment. I have to hang out OJ.
That would.
Hey, he does have big hands.
But then you'd also find out if he really did it, which, I mean, he did. Allegedly.
No. Mm. We pretty much know he did. Otherwise, they wouldn't have won the civil. They wouldn't have won such a huge civil.
The lawsuit.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book.
If I did it.
If I did it, I wouldn't have done it, so you'd have caught me.
Speaking of awful people.
That's a good transition.
So the book I read this week, like I said, is called The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls. Only reason I put it in my holds was because Ryan Walters banned it from the schools.
Because Ryan Walters told you not to read it, so you did.
And I'm the type of person that if you tell me not to do something, it's the first thing I want to do.
I think most of us are that way to a certain extent.
I'm terrible about it. You tell me that I can't do something, and that's all I can think about doing.
Vonnie, you can't win $1 million.
That's it. I'm buying a lottery.
In the lottery.
I need to go home and check my lottery tickets. I hadn't done that in a while. I might have won $1 million.
And we're sitting here starving because you didn't look at your tickets.
Dude,
what
you just
mean,
ate.
Starving?
It was a figure speech.
I mean, I just wolfed down a sandwich and cucumbers.
I was like, there's so much food on this table right
now. I wasn't
now.
Meaning food specifically. I was meaning all that money that Vonnie has in her purse that she hasn't.
She's starving
yet.
Financially.
Yeah, that's it. All right.
She needs a little lettuce.
I have $32 in my bank account today.
Join our Patreon. But for real, join our Patreon for more for more fun content.
All right, Monty.
Okay, go for it. What's this book about?
Like I said, this is a nonfiction, and it's a memoir about Jeanette Wall's life. I was trying to kind of come up with a time frame for when this book took place. I'm thinking that probably 70s. And we're going to say that Jeanette Wall's family is unique.
She was born in 1960, so it's from the time she's a...
And she's about, what, 12? Yeah, so she's
mid-60s. Isn't she younger in the beginning of it?
Well, when it starts out, she's 3 years old. And so, yeah, this is how 60, 70. Special the family is. Her mom's in the other room doing something, and Jeanette is standing on a stepladder at the stove cooking hot dogs.
And she's three?
She's three.
Jesus.
She has on a frilly princess dress, and she catches herself on fire.
Holy
That's
shit.
How the book starts. I don't know if it's mom or dad that come out from the other room with an itchy army blanket and put her out, and they don't have a car, so they have to go to the trailer next door and ask the woman who lives there if she'll take him to the hospital. And I think her dad actually ends up checking her out before she's ready to be released. She's treated. She gets skin grafts and everything else. And the burns are mainly located on her trunk area. So like her hands and legs and face, it's just like her stomach is what's burnt because it caught her dress on fire. Her skirt.
Ow.
Dad does not like hospitals, doesn't believe in them. They're extremely poor. I'm talking like eat cat food poor, poop in a bucket poor.
Ew.
Where does she live?
And mom and dad don't believe in welfare, so they don't ever go for help because her dad said that his thoughts are once you're a charity case, you're always a charity case, and it will stigmatize you for your whole life.
Where do they live? Do you know? Do you remember?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Because they move around quite a bit.
I feel like it was giving Appalachia vibes. That's why I asked.
They start out living in California, but because mom is an artist and doesn't really work, and dad doesn't believe in the institution of keeping a job and likes his liquor just a little too much, they end up moving around quite a bit. And a lot of times it's, you know, pack up the car with what will fit and go in the middle of the night. So they end up going from California. They live in Las Vegas for a while and Arizona. They live in Arizona for quite a while, actually. But then, of course, things happen. They end up moving in the middle of the night from Arizona to West Virginia. And they live in West Virginia quite for a long time because that's where her dad's family is from.
So I was on the right track.
So yeah,
they end up
over in that area. The house that they live in is sad when they live in West Virginia. They don't have running water. Most of the time they don't have electricity. But even though she grows up without a lot of stuff and they're poor, they always seem to, you know, have fun. Like her dad, what he does for birthdays, since he can't afford to like go buy presents, is he'll spend some time with them. And like Jeanette likes to look at the stars. And so he'll take her out and tell her to pick a star and then tell her that star belongs to her.
Aww.
And that she can name it.
That's cool, though.
And so, like, little special moments and stuff. So her dad's not, like, a terrible guy. He is a drunk, but he's also super smart. So when he's sober enough, he has all of these really great ideas. Like, the reason why the book is called The Glass Castle is because one of the little special things that Jeanette and her dad have between them is that her dad is doing these plans, like architectural plans, to build a glass castle.
Hmm.
And Jeanette and him are kind of doing it together. So even though, like I said, despite their status in life, he teaches all of his kids to be super smart. Like they've been able to read from a really young age. They read lots of books. all of them like excel in school, like straight A's, make extra money doing tutoring other kids, well, and selling homework.
I mean,
because, you know,
why not?
That's what you do. So, of course, it has its problems because with any poor community, there seems to be lots of creeps around. And there's situations that she has to finagle her way out of that she talks about. But, I mean, I thought it was a really good book. She has a very interesting life. And I say the book starts out when she's three, but it actually starts out when she's an adult and she's living in New York City. And she sees her mom picking through the trash. And then she instantly, like, back in time to when she's three and starting. And so eventually they make their way to New York City. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but I think it does say that in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeanette tries to talk her mom into letting her, you know, help her get, like, a place to live and everything instead of having to pick through trash and stuff. And she tells her no because she doesn't want to live that way. She likes the way that she lives. Mm. Like, you know, they live in a van for a while until the van gets towed. They just have a very different way of looking at life. I mean, yeah, they're poor. They don't have a lot of things. But it's almost like they don't miss it. And they do want more things in life. But they're not sad about it. They don't let it keep them down. Like, you know, Jeanette is smart, so she gets a job so that she can try to make money, so that she can try to get the things that she wants. Like, she's trying to manipulate her situation to make it better without hating her life. I don't know. It was just really good. I liked
so
it.
So why did Ryan Walters hate it so much? That's my question.
That's what I wondered.
The only thing that I can think of is, like I said, there's situations that she gets into because there's creeps around, and there's one instance, like, her uncle puts his hand on her thigh and she's not paying attention. She just brushes it away and he keeps putting it back, and she looks over and he's wanking off while they're sitting on the couch watching TV.
Yeah, but it's autobiographical.
I know. And, like, another situation where a little boy, like tries to have, and I'm talking about, like, when they're, like, 9 or 10, and tries to, like, have sex with her, and she doesn't know what he's doing, and, you know, so on and so forth. And then he's like, I just raped you.
Mm.
And I'm sure it's something that he's heard from other adults,
yeah,
or TV, and they mimic.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, when you're living in that situation, there's a lot of people who, there's a lot of predators,
mm-hmm,
and it shows, mm-hmm, in the book. But I didn't think there was anything that's that bad. The Kite Runner was worse than for sexual situations in this book, I think.
Mm.
But maybe Ryan Walters just doesn't like poor people.
Well, either that or maybe it happened to him. I mean, that's why he doesn't like it.
I mean, it could be. Maybe he's given too many flashbacks.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I've ever even had that book on a reading list in high school.
I had never actually heard of it.
No. I had heard of it. I've had a bunch of people recommend it to me. Usually when people recommend a book to me, it falls into two categories. Nonfiction, really sad, or really crazy romance.
Well, her mom was a bit of a hoarder.
Yeah, so that would be major triggering for me.
Yeah, because so I don't know if I would recommend it to you.
Nope.
I mean, I don't agree with banning books at all, but I don't know if I think a high schooler would be in a place to, like, read that book.
I'm gonna tell you why.
What's wrong with
it? I disagree with that.
Well, I'm not saying it's wrong. I think it depends on the child. But that's the parent's responsibility, not the government's responsibility.
I don't think that it would be wrong for a high schooler or even a preteen to read, because for one thing, it's going to help bridge the gap between the way rich people treat the poorer people, the poorer kids in class. And I'm saying this as being a poor kid that used to go to class. I mean, it's not fun to be looked down on. You should teach your kids better than that. And I think this book helps with that, because it helps show, like, hey, these are people, they have goals. They're not,
yeah,
it's not like they live in squalor. because
I think it
really
would be a great book for like high school kids who are dealing with homelessness.
Yes.
To read I wouldn't necessarily put it on the reading
list. Other people have dealt with it and come through it. And
yes.
And, yeah.
See, that's kind of where I'm at.
It gives
I'm
them
like,
hope.
You know how many kids are molested as kids that they never see anything to portray anything like that?
Yeah.
And it happens so frequently that nobody knows about it.
And I know it happens in all classes. It's not like it just happens to people who live a little bit below the poverty line.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But if you read about another child having that happen, you're like...
It's the whole breaking the silence thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can talk about
it. But I don't know if
things.
As an English teacher, I would sit and be like, everyone in this room has to read this book, like as an assignment. Because it's like, you have to, if you're going to teach it, you have to be prepared to have those conversations. And a lot of teachers today are not prepared to have those conversations.
Well, they're not allowed to have those conversations.
Well, that too.
Exactly.
But I'm not saying, like, I don't think it's the government's place to tell anybody what they can and can't read. But from a teaching perspective, if you want to teach it, you better be ready for the conversations.
I don't think
that
they're trying to teach it. I think they're just offering it in the library, as they should.
As they should, yeah.
I don't think that it was a bad
item or the moment in that book that I remember most vividly was the thing about the chocolate bar. That they had a chocolate, they had like one piece of chocolate that the family had to share, and the mother waited until the kids were asleep and she ate the whole thing.
Well, no, she was eating it. She was eating it on the couch and she didn't tell them about it. I mean,
been a long time, but I just remember thinking, God, what a betrayal that would, you know.
But, and she stole like the can of corn. Like they were so poor that they picked through the trash to try to get food. Like she'd go to the school cafeteria after school and get food from the trash, stuff like that, or go and get the lunches that people threw away.
Right.
And when nobody was there, obviously.
Yeah, when they were out but, for the day.
Yeah. The mom tended to be a little selfish. She was not the best mom in the world. Mm. Parenting style wise, I don't agree. Definitely. But it's still good to see and put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And I thought it was a pretty good book. It was very real.
That's good.
Very real. And that book again is called The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Megan, what do you got?
If you are listening to this episode when it drops on Sunday night, the Titanic is currently heading towards an iceberg. Or if you're listening to this on Monday, the Titanic has sank. It's in the bottom of the ocean where it will remain until 1985. And why that is relevant is because my book is set on the Titanic, which always gives me anxiety when I read a history book with like a timeline, because you know exactly where you are in the event. And I was a Titanic nerd, so I was having like heart palpitations halfway through this book. So this week I am reviewing Sisters of Fortune by Anna Lee Huber. And we have the Fortune family. They are from Canada. And they have been on like a month's, like 2 or 3 month long European adventure. And they kind of did even more than Europe, really. They did Egypt and they kind of went all over. And it was like this whole thing. And it was for Charlie's 18th birthday or graduation or both. The younger brother's something for him. And all the girls are older. We have the three sisters on the ship. So we have Alice, Flora, and Mabel. And of course, because it's 1912, you know, they all are in some kind of committed relationship. Two of them are engaged and one's just being a rebel and dating the musician to piss her dad off. So, you know, whatever. Obviously they're a well-off family because they have been traveling for months and they have tickets to be on the Titanic. So we start off with them in Egypt, and Alice is out to dinner or at a cafe for breakfast or something with one of their friends. There's like three guys that are like traveling with them from also from Canada, none of which are like dating any of the girls. And they're out at a cafe and like a soothsayer guy like runs up to Alice and like reads her palm, and he gives her a very ominous prim like reading that says, "I see you in peril on the sea in a big open boat. You're going to lose everything." And of course, she's like, that's a terrible idea because I have to get home to Canada and there's no airplane. So I'm going to have to get on a boat one way or the other. And she kind of doesn't forget it. But everyone's like, oh, you know, that's like an easy tourist give me fortune. Right. Because they know more than likely if you're a foreigner and you're in Egypt, you got to get back on a boat to go somewhere. And so she kind of brushes it off. So they are on the Titanic. First class passengers. They have three cabins. Their parents are in one. The sisters are in one. Their brother's in one. And they're not quite as fancy as Rose's cabin, if you remember Rose's cabin from the movie. But they're still first class cabins. And we quickly meet Chess, or Chester. And he is a world famous tennis player. And he is kind of smitten with Flora. And everyone keeps saying, like, bro, she's engaged. Like, you're not, this is not going to be a thing. But everyone else is watching them like, okay, so the sisters are like plotting. Like, how can we convince dad to let her break off her engagement so that we can get these two together? Because they are ridiculous. Even though they've only been on this boat together for like 2 days, we can just feel the like love. And what I loved about this book is if you are a Titanic nerd, she did such a good job of intertwining what I would consider like Easter egg history facts. Because when you're reading them, it's one of those like, oh, if you know, you know, kind of moments. Because she talks about, and she could just perfectly like weaves them into the story. The three sister, the family fortune is actually true Titanic passengers. So if you want a spoiler, you can Google them. I did not. I had self-control because I didn't want to know until I got to the end. But the family does exist if you want to know what happens to them so you don't have heart palpitations. But she just perfectly wove them into the references, like the famous pictures of the kid playing whatever game he was playing on the deck, because that photographer got off at Southampton before the ship set sail across the Atlantic. So all those like iconic Titanic pictures that you see, like you met that photographer now in this story. You meet the unsinkable Molly Brown. You see the Astors. You see Ismay and the captain and so many things that are so familiar, at least to me. Even if you've seen the Titanic movie, a lot of these moments will be like familiar to you. She just did it so gracefully. And I appreciated the detail because there is a lot of information out there that like is well known. And then you have others that aren't as well known. So when they get some of the extras in there, to me, that's really fun for me. There was someone that I heard about that I heard actually about at a book club. She was an author, Helen Candy, and she was on the Titanic, and she wrote her book before the Titanic and lived here in Oklahoma. She lived in Guthrie when she wrote her book.
Cool.
And it was a book called An Oklahoma Romance. And so as I'm reading this book, and we had just talked about this at a book club I was at, and I was like, holy shit, that lady's in this book. So there were some lesser known people as well as like the characters you expect to see, like Molly Brown and Ismay, and like the famous conversation of Captain Smith and Bruce Ismay talking about like lighting the last boiler and trying to like get to New York faster. That conversation, one of our characters overhears that conversation. She's not the one that necessarily overheard it in the true like story, but it was a blast, and it's an emotional roller coaster because at the headings of some of the chapters she'll tell you the time and the date. So like the 14th is when the Titanic hits the iceberg, 15th the Titanic sinks. So towards the end of the book you're like on April 14th and it's 10:30 and you're like, shit, we are like an hour and a half from disaster. And you're just you're like trying to keep track of where everybody is. And you're like, okay, like, are they close to a lifeboat? Are they close to a life jacket? Like, what's going on? Where is everybody? But and it's romance. There's definitely romance with Chess and Flora. Mabel's kind of fun because she's kind of, she wants to go to college and wants to do all these things. So her and her dad are kind of having a row about her, like, going to college. And there's the successful ladies on the boat, like the author, and there's like a doctor, and she's trying to like get them into the same parlor so that she can be like, look, dad, they're famous women who went to college. And he's having none of it. But Chess is a fictional character, the kind of love interest. There was a famous tennis player on the boat, but he's actually friends with that person's name is in the book. He's more of a blend of that tennis player. And then there was another person that was also on the boat, and she kind of just made him. He's kind of like the Jack of her story. Like, she's like, he just kind of exists in this world. But it was fantastic. I love it. I love a good Titanic book, though, because I get nerded out on the details. And I did just that. And I had to be careful what I Googled. Because at one point I read the blurb, and I was like, the true story. But I was like, wait, all the sisters are real? Like, hold on. And I had to be carefully not Google spoilers for myself. She did say the older sister is mostly fictional. Like, she existed. She uses her middle name instead of her first name just to kind of distinguish from the actual person. Because her story is completely different in real life than what happened in the book. But she was a good sister to use as that kind of like tool to kind of mix up the story a little bit. But I would highly recommend it. If you are a Titanic person or a history person, you should definitely read Sisters of Fortune by Anna Lee Huber.
Awesome. Okay, Keith, what do you have?
So the book I am reviewing this week is called Lilith by Eric Rickstad. And it's funny, I was on my Google account, and you know how they give you like the little newsfeed things. I saw this book talked about on NPR. Mm. And so I was like, wow, I have never heard of that. And that sounds really interesting. And it is a really short read. I think it's like 245 pages. So, I mean, I just picked it and read it yesterday.
Oh, wow. That was fast.
That was quick.
It's a very quick read, but it's very well written, and it's really, really interesting. So the book is about basically about a woman named Elizabeth who is a teacher, and she wakes up and she's a single mom, and she has an 8-year-old who kind of tells her that he has an icky feeling that day and doesn't want to go to school. And she's the kindergarten teacher at the school, and she, you know, is just like, do you feel bad? Like, she's checking all the stuff, and she says, you know, you have to go. And that morning is the third Monday of the month, and every third Monday, they have to do lockdown drills at the school. And so a little girl comes into, one of her students comes in, and she's like 5, and she's asking, like, did they have to do these when you were little? And Elizabeth's telling her no, and she's kind of like, well, why not? And Elizabeth realizes she really can't say why school shootings are a thing now and why they have to do these lockdown drills. And then sadly, that day, like that morning, there is a school shooter in her elementary school. Holy shit. And her classroom is such that, and let me just say that for people, the school shooting scene was very quick. There's no graphic depiction of what's going on, really. It's a lot of, she hears a lot of pop, pop, pops. She hears a lot of thuds, that kind of thing. She immediately locks her door and has her students, their lockdown protocol is you go to the door, you lock it, and you sit under your desk, and your students sit under their desks and the sand table. And as it's happening, she knows this is the protocol, but she's like watching, looking at her little kids, and are like, these kids are sitting ducks right now. And because she's a kindergarten teacher, her classroom has a door to the outside because the playground's right there. So she opens the door, takes all 17 of her kids, tells them that whoever beats her to the library, the town library, which is like across this field from the school, gets $10, whoever beats her. And so these kids are like high-tailing it. And they all make it to the library. The librarian has already heard what's happening, locks up the library behind them. But as I said, Elizabeth has an 8-year-old at the school. So she leaves those kids with the librarian, and she goes back to the school and goes in through the door and goes to her child's classroom.
I have full body goosebumps right now.
Yeah, dude, it's okay. Intense. She finds her son in the closet of his classroom. His teacher is dead. A lot of the students are dead. And he is profoundly injured. He's been shot 5 times.
Oh, my God.
And she's, like, cradling him. And she locks the door of the classroom. And she's cradling him in the closet. And the guy comes by the door of the classroom. And she just, and he starts shooting at the door. So she takes her son and she bashes out the window of the classroom, because that classroom doesn't have a door to the outside. And she barely manages to, like, shove him out the window and get herself out. And she gets shot in the process. And as she goes out, the shooter does get shot and killed by the police. But it's the kind of thing where her son, his name is Lyden, and he is so profoundly injured. Like, they are in the hospital. He has, like, a 17-hour surgery. Then another, like, it's stuff like he will never, like, he's lost a part of his bladder. He's lost, like, tons of his intestine had to be removed. I mean, he won't ever walk right again. And there's a huge surgery to just make sure that he walks at all. And she is kind of just numb and is just in the hospital where he's placed in a medical coma. And I mean, you watch her and nothing happens in her life for like 2 weeks, because she literally she smells bad because she hasn't gone home. And she's just constant vigil of her son. Then one day she realizes there's a TV in his room, and one of the nurses has turned it on, I guess. And she sees this guy, and he is talking about, it's been like 2 weeks, and he's already talking about another school. There have been 3 school shootings since she's been in the hospital. Jesus. So hers is old news already.
Right.
And he's talking about how if every one of the students had a gun and all the teachers and the custodians had guns, this wouldn't have happened. And like, that's his big thing, is that we should give guns to every single person. He doesn't believe in waiting periods. He doesn't believe in mentally ill people, like not getting it. Like, he thinks everybody in the world should have one.
So good. Then everyone will just shoot at everyone. Like that.
And she's watching this guy, and she's like, you know what? You know why he thinks this? Because he's never been a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, she is like, he needs to be made a victim.
Vigilante mom.
She comes up with this like crazy plan, and she does all this stuff, and basically becomes... she records what she does, and she becomes a vigilante of sorts. She disguises herself and is very, very clever about it so that they can't find out what she's done. But then it starts this whole thing, because she videoed it. It's televised all over the place. And she calls herself Lilith. Lilith was believed to be the first wife of Adam by some people. And Lilith was created not from a rib. She was created from the same dust that Adam was created from. And as such, she is an equal to Adam. And she basically kind of like rocks the boat, is what some people believe. And she is banished by God because she asks too many questions. She's too much like Adam. So she is sent to hell to be like in charge, like the mother of demons basically.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's a story that a lot of people believe in. And so she decides to call herself Lilith based on that story, because she really resonates with it. And she believes that men are the problem with the gun violence and with all of these things. Meanwhile, the whole reason she even leaves the hospital or turns on the TV is because she keeps getting these messages from
reporters,
the union representative of the teachers of her school, because she is facing disciplinary action for not following the protocol. Meanwhile, her classroom is the only classroom that had no fatalities, but they want to fire her because she didn't. And they they expect her to kowtow and apologize. And her rep says, contrition is what we want here. And she basically is like, no, like.
Well, and ask the parents
and
of those
of these
kids.
The superintendent exactly. wasn't at the school. Yeah, the superintendent wasn't at the school and the principal wasn't at the school. And these are the two people she's meeting with. And I think it's a superintendent. Either way, both of the people weren't at the school for really dumb reasons. Like one had the sniffles and one just never comes to the school. And she basically says that. And she's like, and you guys have grade school age children, but they're in a private school. I don't understand how you can fault me. And I mean, the town, like she has no idea, but she's like a hero to this town.
Yeah.
Like, and she basically is like, you know what? You can shove it with your contrition and everything. And when word gets out that you're going to fire me, I can guarantee that there are going to be a lot of people in my corner.
Yeah.
So she's dealing with that. And she does this vigilante justice thing. And what sort of kind of happens kind of reminds me of The Power almost, in that all these people see her
and then they start to do it.
Yeah. And then it's like, and it's like stuff like gun owners don't want to sell to women. And dude, it's like a whole thing. And it's basically just really thought out, like what would happen if all of a sudden women turned on men in response to gun violence.
Martha's putting this on hold right now.
This totally sounds fucking fantastic.
I think you guys know that I underline passages that are especially meaningful to me in books are really mm-hmm. funny. I've underlined half this book. I mean, this wow. author really just, I mean, he really has thought this out. And it's kind of amazing that it all happens in so few pages.
And it's written by a guy?
It is.
Yeah. I'm amazed.
Wow.
I mean, he really, it's really incredible. I mean, I didn't see it going where it was going, but I get why he went there. I mean, if you know what I mean. Like, it's just... And there are so many people who, everybody has an opinion about Lilith. And I mean, even the people who disagree with her, I mean, some of them have really interesting opinions. And I mean, some of the people, there's a mention of there are mentions of injustices that these women try to fix that right away you will know the things that have happened that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, but who was the swimmer that the judge was like, I'm not going to ruin this guy's life.
Brock Turner.
When you raped that girl.
Yeah. Like Brock Turner.
That case is like, I knew that Brock's something, right?
Yeah. Brock Turner.
Thank you. Like, you know that they're talking about that. And there were just, it was really interesting. It's very, I mean, I don't know that I could have read 500 pages about it, because the whole time you're just kind of, I mean, I'm kind of angry thinking about a lot of it, but it was a really good book. It really made me think a lot. Like, I didn't agree with some of it, but he does a really good job of, I mean, even the people whose opinions I didn't agree with, they were thought out and things. You don't just hear about the people who are killed trying to find justice. I mean, you also hear then about their backstories. Like, I mean, these guys, they have these terrible opinions, but they have families. Like, they have little kids. They sometimes are great community people. I mean, sometimes when you kill somebody like this, there are going to be a bunch of people who are not going to agree with it, even though you might think it's such a like cut and dried case, like that they so deserve to die. But then you like see the people behind it. It was really interesting. I can't stop thinking about it. I keep going back to passages. But yeah, I think enjoyed it is the wrong word to use. But I would make sure you're in a good frame of, like, an open frame of mind to read it and watch, because, I mean, they don't really give trigger warnings, but, I mean, there's a lot of, and again, it's not super descriptive or anything, but, I mean, there are a lot of people dying, and some of them you might be happy about, and some of them you might not be happy about. So I would really recommend it. I can't believe I haven't heard. I mean, it just came out at the end of March, but I'm surprised I haven't heard more about it. Go NPR. And that, again, was Lilith by Eric Rickstad.
Okay, Pat.
Okay, I have a murder mystery this week.
Hmm. Awesome.
City Under One Roof by Iris Yamashita. And what makes this a really intriguing mystery is it has a unique and fascinating setting. It is set in the fictional small town of Port Metier, or Metier, Alaska. It's in a fairly remote section. It's on the coast, and it's a place where there was once a military base. And what happened was that when the military base was there, they built a high-rise apartment building next to it to house all the other people who were associated with the base. Well, the base has closed. So all that's left is this one building called the Davidson Condos, or Daveco, and all remaining 205 people who live in Port Metier live in this one apartment building, hence the title, City Under One Roof. Now, you might ask, once the military base has closed, why would anybody stay there? And what it turns out to be the case is that people who stayed there are people who are running from something, people who have something to hide, people who have some secret, some indiscretion in their background. Those are the people who tend to end up here. So it's a whole small city under one roof where there are a lot of people who don't really want you looking into their background. At the beginning of the book, teenager Amy Lynn finds on the beach a hand and a foot, human hand and foot, reports them to the police. And at first, everyone is just kind of willing to let this go, because what they say is, this is most likely from someone who fell off a cruise ship or committed suicide and jumped off a cruise ship. This is the remains of a body that's washed up here. And they say, this has happened in the past. We've found bodies or body parts, and it's so somebody who... But into this situation comes Kara Kennedy, who is a detective from the Anchorage Police Force. She comes out because she's heard of this finding. She comes out to check this out. And shortly after she arrives in town, a blizzard sets in. There is the only way during the winter to get in and out of, the only way during the winter to get in and out of this town is by a road that runs through a single tunnel. And the blizzard blocks the tunnel. And they say it's going to be at least 4 or 5 days, maybe considerably longer, until we get the road cleared and you can get out. So she rents a room, basically, a condo in the Daveco Condos, and starts looking into things while she's there. Mm. Well, Kara has her own difficult background. About a year before, her husband and young son, about, say, 6 years old, went on a hiking trip and never came back. They just vanished into thin air. And she has been understandably distraught, traumatized. She is, in fact, not an active detective. She is on leave from the detective from the Anchorage Police Force, because basically the situation with her husband and child has left her with PTSD, and she is pretty well traumatized. But she's heard about this, and she comes up because when she hears about weird disappearances or weird things, her brain goes, maybe there's some link. Maybe I can find out something here that will help me find out what happened to my husband and son. So Kara shows up, the blizzard sets in, and she is stuck there. The chief of police is not particularly sympathetic to her cause, but there is a policeman on the force, which is a small force, about three people. His name is JB, and he's fairly sympathetic to her. So he's the one guy in town who's actually trying to help her in this investigation. The chapters in this book are narrated. You get three different points of view. You get Kara, you get Amy, the teenager who had originally found the hand and foot on the beach, and you get Lonnie, who is a really interesting character. Lonnie is a woman in her 20s who has gone through her own share of trauma. As a fairly young child, she saw her mother beaten to death by an abusive boyfriend. Mm. She is also possibly a little bit on the mentally challenged side, and she has spent a good portion of her teenage years in an, well, they just call it the Institute, some sort of a mental facility. And she basically wants to do anything not to go, have to go back to the Institute. She lives on her own. She's able to take care of herself. She's not so severely challenged or handicapped, but she lives on her own, and she's made friends with a moose. The moose's mother was killed by a hunter, and she rescued the baby moose and basically has raised it. And so the moose, which she named Denny, Denny follows her around. He's her buddy. And tourists who come in the summer love to have their pictures taken with Denny. And so the town has made sure that the town charges. If somebody wants their picture taken with Denny, they charge them a fee. And the town makes sure that that money goes to Lonnie and helps her to keep food on her table and whatnot. But Lonnie's point of view is very interesting because she doesn't always understand the things that she hears or witnesses. So she's repeating them back to herself, but almost parrot-like without quite understanding what's going on. To add another and more frightening element to this situation, after Kara has been there for 3 or 4 days, a gang comes to town on snowmobiles. It's a gang of thugs. They are headquartered at a local indigenous village. They are not indigenous people themselves. They have worked their way in there. One guy was an ex-con, and he married the daughter of the village chief and then got his buddies in here. And so he's kind of gotten them entrenched in the village, and he has the other people in the village are pretty much terrified of them. But that's where he's set up his headquarters. So this gang shows up and terrorizes the little town of Fort Metier. And there is a connection, as we will eventually learn without giving too much away, but there's a connection between the hand and the foot and the gang. And there are some other interesting side notes. Like there's a Japanese woman, an older Japanese woman who had been a pop star as a young woman in Japan. And she's moved here and kind of clings to her. She sings in the local bar and clings to her background as I used to be a star. And the teenager, Amy, her mother runs the only Chinese restaurant. There are only two restaurants in town. There's the pub where the Japanese woman sings, and there's Amy's mother's Chinese restaurant. And one of the things, I don't think it's too much to give this away, because you find out relatively early in the book, Amy's science teacher, her high school biology teacher, has them do, they're studying genetics. And so he has them all do like a ancestry or 23andMe or some kind of genetic testing. And Amy finds out from this testing that she's not Chinese, she's Korean. And so, yeah, that has to do with the secret that her mother is keeping. And why is her mom living in this very, very out of the way place? Like I said, the setting is almost like another character. The book is full of quirky characters, these weird people who choose to live in the middle of nowhere where you can almost assuredly not run into somebody who used to know you. They'd have to be working real hard to find you up there. But the setting itself is a kind of a character. There are tunnels that run from the condo over to the abandoned military base. and the tunnels are not completely filled with water, but there's, you know, foot deep water here and there. You have to slosh through them. They're icky and creepy and dangerous. And of course, the teenagers who live there love to go over through the tunnels and go over, and they have their little hangout areas and whatnot in the military base. I can't say much more without giving away too many things, but this is a very well-plotted murder mystery, takes some good twists and turns, and the three points of view, Amy, Kara, and Lonnie, make it really very interesting as you see what overlaps and how you can put those different points of view together to figure out what's happened. So I highly recommend, if you are a murder mystery fan, City Under One Roof by Iris Yamashita.
Awesome. So I read this book very quickly as well. I started reading it right after my friend left.
Okay.
So she left on Wednesday night.
Wednesday.
I had it on hold at the library for a while, and it had just come in. It's called Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrash. And it was described as part murder mystery, part gay international love story.
Okay.
Which,
that's,
you know,
different.
Yeah. Murder mystery, I'm raising my hand for that. And why not a gay international love story? So it begins in the late 80s in New Hampshire. And the main character's name is Lacey Bond, and she's a young girl. I don't remember exactly how old, but it seems to me that she was in her early teens. Her parents are suddenly accused of all kinds of horrific crimes because this local psychiatrist is retrieving memories. So it falls into that era of satanic panic.
Yep.
And
recovered memories.
Yes, the recovered memories and everything like that. There are probably five, I think, kids who are accusing them of just horrific things. They say, you know, they took me out to the goat shed and made me, I don't remember exactly what that, you know, you can kind of get the idea through the whole.
It's like the Macmillan preschool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, Lacey's mom, we find out through the course of the story, is a heroin addict. So she's out of it most of the time. But they're very hippie-ish. They're very free-spirited people. You know, they live sort of off of the land. They have goats. And so they're a little different. They don't really fit into the town. And Lacey and her older sister, Eclair, I know, right, are left alone in the house. I think Eclair comes back from someplace. She's older. Florida? Someplace in Florida. So she comes back to take care of Lacey. Well, it's just so weird because the lawyer then moves into their house. So the lawyer's living there, that's, you know, representing her parents, moves into the house with Lacey and Eclair.
That seems weird.
Yeah. And Lacey she's sort of just taking care of herself, really, because her sister becomes this like media darling. You know, everybody wants to know what Eclair is doing. And Eclair is just like blossoming under the limelight of this trial.
I can't handle that her name is Eclair.
I know. It's hilarious.
I'm just picturing
a dessert. But it just fits so well for the type of personality she is.
It's awesome.
There's all kinds of, they send Lacey to a shrink because they want to see if they can recover some of her memories from when she was younger.
Mm.
And of course, it's just, all of it is just horrific and ridiculous. And both of her parents get sent to jail. And Lacey then gets sent on to live with all kinds of sketchy people. But the thing that you start to learn right away is that Lacey is gay. And so a lot of the times you get her inner thoughts about, you know, they send her to the psychiatrist and she's focusing on the fact that the psychiatrist is wearing a very revealing blouse, you know, stuff like that. Just like a normal kid who's coming into their sexuality would. There's also some really sketchy abuse that happens in it. Abuse by a female psychiatrist of Lacey. The book then sort of zooms into the future, and you see Lacey, who's now a grown woman who has changed her name. I missed the part where her best friend during the trial's name is Dylan. Well, she runs into Dylan years later, and Dylan is now a woman named Destiny. I think it was in one of the homes, one of the, you know, like the foster homes or care home or whatever that she's in, where she runs into Destiny. And they, way down the line, become a couple. Now, there's also a murder mixed in here. I'm not going to go into details about who is the murdered and the murderer, but just suffice it to say that this is an extremely complex, fascinating book with all sorts of twists and turns there's no way you could ever see coming. As I was reading back through some of the comments and reviews, as I tend to do right before I get ready to review a book, one of the comments on there was a woman who said, I'm reading this book for my job, and let's just say that if this gets put on Netflix, it was because of me.
Ooh.
So, I mean,
that's ominous.
Yeah, no, it's good.
It's good, but good. Yes.
Yeah, because that's the kind of story it is. It's just really complex. I thought it was fascinating because it's always interesting to be in the mind of someone who's different from you. And I liked the fact that she talks about the sexuality of this girl in a way that is normal. She doesn't make a huge deal out of it. It's part of her. So it's not a huge deal. And the same thing with Dylan. When she sees her down the road and Dylan is then Destiny, she's not upset about it or weirded out by it at all. But it's just who Dylan is. And I love the way that whole thing was treated. I thought it was a fantastic read. I read it extremely quickly. It was 13 hours and I devoured it. I read so many good books last week that it was, or in the last 2 weeks, that was really hard for me to choose. But overall, this was probably my favorite book that I've read in a while. It's called Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrash.
We had some intense reads this week.
Yes, we did.
No one had anything like light and fluffy.
No, it is kind of unusual for us all to be in
the deep
end. I couldn't
not review the Titanic book on the episode that literally airs on the sinking day of the Titanic.
It doesn't surprise me at all that you planned that out, Megan.
I did.
You know what we should do? We should at least mention our book mangle that we had at Second Story.
Yes.
Because I thought it went really well. Did we talk about that last week? No, we didn't. Nope, we didn't.
No, because it would have aired after.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you, Second Story, for hosting our first book mingle. We had a fantastic time. So thank you to everyone who came out to see us and hang out.
And we're headed to another one on Saturday night, which will be after this airs.
Yep.
The only regret I have is that Keith and Pat have to live vicariously through us.
I'm not. If someone else is looking for dark romance, I'm FaceTiming Keith on Saturday. You keep that phone close.
Like, did you hear that us. Conan O'Brien taking Pat Sajak's place on the wheel?
Ew! Really? No.
I thought it was, his name from American Idol?
Ryan Seacrest.
Oh,
that
yeah, I guess
sense,
that's right.
He does everything.
But I knew it was one of those guys.
If it was Conan, that'd be...
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
He doesn't seem like the
Conan
type to
would
do
just
a
be
show
all
like that.
Over the place. He'd be like, spin the wheel! Like, I feel like he's like that, like, golden retriever. Like, we wouldn't know what's happening on Wheel of Fortune with Conan.
I just can't believe that Pat Sajak is actually retiring. And you know that dude has had some plastic surgery because he...
Oh, yeah.
He looks totally... He looks the same as he did, like...
I bet if you turned around and saw him in the back, you'd have a big, like, a clip...
Like a hair clip.
Like a clip behind his neck to make his skin tighter.
Something.
It's a hair piece. So.
Well, I had to have a hair piece because they pulled the skin back so much that his real hair is only like a mohawk.
Just a little bit.
He has a natural mohawk from all the facelifts.
Like the people who've been saying, let Vanna be the host. She's been standing there for like 30 years and turning the letters. Give the woman a promotion.
She probably wants to get out of there too. She's like, dude, I get to retire.
You know what's really awful though? If they put a new person in there, like a younger person, it's just going to make her look super old.
True.
It makes me feel bad. It makes me feel worse for her that she didn't get the, like, hosting job.
It's, like, almost an end of an era, though. If Vanna leaves the same time as Pat Sajak, like, they've been doing the Wheel of Fortune since, like, I was 5, 6 years old.
As long as they don't go through a debacle like they did on Jeopardy with 45 guest hosts and... whittle it down.
Well, I think they were
1975.
I was 10.
I was 1.
I was negative 10.
One. I was not even 1.
I was not even 1.
I was 22.
Pat, you're the same age as my mother. My mom had me when she was 22. That blows my mind because you and my mom are so different.
Night and day.
Some of us never grew up. That's my theory, is if you never have kids, you never have to grow up yourself.
So you're saying that it's my fault my mom is the way that she is?
Yeah, I think that's what she's saying, Bonnie. I think she's saying all of that is your fault.
That makes me feel bad about myself and my life decisions.
Your mom would be an old hippie. Yeah.
Well, she still smokes the weed, so. It's just now she does it with my dog.
Oh my God, that sounds really weird. And that's going to do it for Three Book Girls.
If you made it this far, you are truly bookish. So go to Facebook and join your fellow book lovers on the Three Book Girls squad. Follow Three Book Girls on socials and be on the lookout for their next live event. Proud of their lack of shelf control, Three Book Girls is a Steel Trap production.